On today's College Football Inquirer, Ross Dellinger broke a big, big story. Notre Dame and USC are not continuing their series. It will be paused at least for 2026 and 2027, ending one of the most historic rivalries in college football that only had been paused previously for World War II and a global pandemic. Plus, we talk about some of the non-playoff bowl games. Which ones are we most interested in, and why do they both have sprinkles on the helmets? And we'll also talk about maybe some other candidates Michigan should consider, since the search may take a little bit longer. And if we're going to take longer, let's look at some more people. Talk about it all on today's College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer with Ross Dellinger and Stephen Godfrey. I am Andy Staples, and Ross Dellinger, you have been a busy, busy man today. As we record this, you have just broken a story that USC and Notre Dame could not come to an agreement. They will not continue their rivalry in 2026 and 2027, which is a pretty massive shakeup from a scheduling standpoint and speaks to some much bigger things. The themes we've been talking about a lot on this show, the giant conferences, Notre Dame playing as an independent, scheduling as an independent, and trying to get into the college football playoff.
Yeah, think about, we talk on the show a lot about the end of things that are traditional to college football and a lot of series that have ended because of the insane money grab in conference realignment. And we appear to be looking at another one. These two teams have played every single year, yeah, except the pandemic. For like, so 78 straight years.
Yeah. And World War II was the other thing that delayed.
Yeah. 3 years during, yeah, 3 or 4 years during World War II. Outside of that, you know, they were supposed to play 97th time. I kind of take listeners into the, what happened here behind, sort of behind the scenes. The last week of November when they played the game, they thought they were going to have actually an agreement to announce the Friday before they played, Black Friday. They had agreed on a deal. It sounded like USC was going to host Notre Dame next year, and then they were going to return. They were going to do a two-year deal, at least for now, 26, 27. They were ready to announce that Black Friday. There was an agreement. And then for whatever reason, it just sort of carried on and on and on of negotiations. And then you had the CFP selection show. And then you had some of the stuff come out about the guarantee for Notre Dame in future playoff years if they're in the top 12. And so you just had all this stuff sort of get in the middle of the negotiations. And in the end, USC decided that the Thanksgiving date was not going to be ideal for them when it came to college football playoff implications. So they wanted to move the game earlier in the season. Notre Dame couldn't move things around to do that in week two or three, when is what they were talking about. And so the last conversation was potentially doing something in week zero. And USC had pitched that, and they were kind of working toward maybe something on that, and it just wasn't going to work. I think in the end, Notre Dame thought that USC just didn't want to play the game in general. And so they just kind of moved on, and they scheduled BYU. And so now we have the BYU game. And so for at least 4 years, based on how Notre Dame is scheduled out and how USC is scheduled out, it's unlikely that these two will get back together until at the earliest 2030. So we have another sort of end of a historic piece of college football that that we've sort of been a fixture for years and now is at least ending temporarily.
Yeah, I think it's real simple here. There's nothing to be really outraged about. We've moved on to mega conferences. This is there's a number of ways we could take this, right, guys? We could talk about Notre Dame is going to continue to struggle as an independent as we push up conference, you know, regular season games for the Big Ten, for the SEC.
You better hope your ACC teams that land on your schedule late in the season are good. That's what you better hope. Yeah. Otherwise, you will not play a good team in October or November.
Well, and it's interesting, Ross, to hear some of the details from your story. You're talking about week zero, pushing things earlier. Notre Dame would have love to have, or sorry, yeah, Notre Dame would have loved to have kept this game later in the season. I totally understand why USC doesn't, by the way. It's hard to cry foul here other than to just kind of constantly repeat myself and say like, hey, maybe USC probably shouldn't have gone to the Big Ten, but financially, I totally understand why USC went to the Big Ten. Something has to give in these situations, and Notre Dame is probably going to be on the losing end of a lot of this. I'm sure people are going to cry foul about tradition for a while, but this is a money move in the long term because you have to be able to preserve your resume if you're USC. And I think we're going to kick around some of their upcoming schedules. Unfortunately, I get the football reasons for doing this from the USC side completely.
So you can call them soft all you want. And I have called them soft for trying to get out of this series. But here's who they're playing.
It's
next
crazy.
Year in the Big Ten. Their home schedule is Maryland, Ohio State, Oregon, Washington. Like, Washington is going to be better than they were this year, and Ohio State and Oregon are still going to be Ohio State and Oregon. Their away schedule in the Big Ten, Indiana, Penn State, Rutgers, Wisconsin, UCLA. So Indiana's still going to be good. Matt Campbell, we assume, is going to make Penn State good again very quickly. We'll see what Fickell does with Wisconsin in his last chance there. And Bob Chesney's taken over at UCLA, and he's been very good. So this is a gnarly conference schedule. To throw Notre Dame as the last game of this would be asking a lot. I get it.
And it's
I still
exactly
hate
what,
it, but I get
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's because it's exactly what Notre Dame needs. We talked about it. It wasn't always going to break exactly like it did in 2025, where you had some untested position players. You weren't totally confident in your roster in week one. And then they had a bye in week two. I keep saying the first 2 weeks of the season, but they played in weeks one and week three, and those were their two most substantial potential data points. This is another knock against that. We've already done this segment. We've already talked about it. What Notre Dame needs are quality potential wins after October 15th. Those are the hardest dates to schedule when you are an independent.
Yeah. Now, good news for Notre Dame next year. Miami, the visit from Miami to South Bend is November 7th.
Yeah.
So that helps a little bit. But
and keep in mind too, Andy, like Notre Dame has pushed the ACC, and actually I don't think we've talked about it, but ACC Commissioner Jim Phillips and Notre Dame AD Pete Bavakwa met Friday. I'm trying to think, everything's running together. Thursday or Friday in New York City to sort of start to maybe like bury the hatchet,
mend fences,
to speak. but like one of the things that Notre Dame has pushed the ACC on, right, has been to stiffen up our schedule in the ACC and they want to play every year Miami, Clemson, and Florida State. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's going to be a goal to try to get that to happen. So a lot of these late season issues that Notre Dame is having, hopefully for them, they're hoping that it will be solved as the ACC moves on. And the ACC just released their schedules, but, you know, I don't think that entailed
one of those,
Notre Dame.
Right. But that's one of those deals that if you do that, you're not really disadvantaging Clemson, Miami, and Florida State in that situation either. They kind of need that stuff too, because the rest of the ACC has been kind of weak.
Yes.
So
they want it too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They want the Notre Dame
Clemson
game
did
to
that
help
deal,
them.
Right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The
no,
deal,
no one forced
no matter
Clemson
what happens
to do that.
The ACC. Yeah, the Clemson and Notre Dame have struck this 12-year deal. I think around half of the games will count as ACC games. It just depends on how the rotation sort of goes.
I'm sorry, that's that's
well, they don't count as
Notre Dame's one of Notre Dame's
ACC.
Five.
Yeah,
AC,
yeah,
yeah.
Okay, so, that makes it better to understand.
Yeah.
Now a normal person will get that. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, is NC State Virginia an ACC game next year? Because I have no idea.
And by the way, is that aberration responsible for the participants in the ACC championship game this year? Yes,
it sure is.
Can we fly in
about
NC State
the
Virginia
ACC schedule about how five teams will play eight conference games and 12 teams will play
nine
nine conference games? I'm sure that won't come up in the CFP selection. No.
But wait, guys, when they do get everybody playing nine conference games, they don't actually have everybody playing nine conference games because they have 17
one,
football playing schools.
Right?
I think this is
16 will play nine.
One's
going to
be
always
on an eight rotation. Yeah.
I think this is great because it's laying the groundwork for when the ACC is torn apart. Like, we were all really, or at least I was very alarmed and felt very kind of sad when the Pac-12 fell apart, was torn apart, whatever, pick your verb and your verb tense. By the time the ACC gets around to being deconstructed, I'm going to be cheering it on because I don't know how many more seasons they can accidentally screw up with the inability to manage a basic football conference.
I mean, they're a basic football conference in the teenage girl version of the word basic.
Basic, but yes, they are. Very good, Andy.
There's nothing yeah. basic about a 17-team league that stretches from Boston to the Bay Area.
Yeah, it's a genius idea. Good job, guys. I don't know. I don't want to do this segment every show, but yeah, it's like when I saw Ross's news, I was like, well, another casualty of stuff that happened 3 or 4 years ago. Like, everybody's going to cry foul. Probably blame the players for getting paid.
The other really interesting piece of this is who Notre Dame picked up to fill the schedule. And because if you thought they were ducking BYU in the bowl game, well, they're fine playing BYU. They just were still really mad and throwing a hissy fit after missing the college football playoff. That's why they're not. And also, we'll talk about the sprinkles on the helmets later, probably. But they didn't want to put sprinkles on their helmets. I think that's the real reason they're not in the Pop-Tarts Bowl. But they are playing BYU, which, Ross, you tell me. I'm guessing BYU has some empathy for Notre Dame because BYU scheduled as an independent for years and years before joining the Big 12.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you can remember when before they joined, they were kind of in a similar position. And I'm trying to think how often they played when they were independents.
Let me look at the old Wikipedia page.
I was gonna say somebody hit up Wikipedia.
I don't remember being that often, but yeah, they do. They kind of know the place that Notre Dame's in, and I think the Big 12. Three times,
I believe. Because BYU was still in the Mountain West in 05, I believe. So, 12, 13, and 22 would have been the independent
years. One of the things happening right now, we may have broached it a week or so ago when all that kind of came out with Pete Bavaca criticizing the Notre Dame AD, criticizing the selection committee, and then reminding everybody about Notre Dame's guarantee in the CFP that starting next year, in a 12-team CFP, if they're ranked in the top 12, they get in automatically. That has certainly riled up some people across college sports, and I think there's certain leagues, USC probably is in one, who their schools are starting to shy away, let's
say. Did Tony Petitti forget that he agreed to that?
I don't think so. No,
did he not inform his schools that he agreed to that?
Well, there's a lot of athletic directors in a lot of different conferences that either did not know or weren't ever told or just plain forgot. And I think that it took many by surprise, and many are taking it as, well, you know what, as one of them said to me recently, this is a competitive imbalance, and so we're just not going to play them. We're not going to schedule them. And the Big 12, to its credit, was kind of like, go for it, BYU. Like, it's good for us, right? It's good for our TV. It's good for our viewership and attendance and brand and all that stuff. So they were like, let's do it.
That's our your mark.
Yeah.
That's our segment. Pete Bavaca behind the scene or in front of the camera, but behind the scenes, is like, go ahead and play in BYU.
Let's go for it. Yeah.
No, I think it's fantastic, by the way. Like, if we're in this weird transitional era of college football history, I think the best thing in the world is for a conference commissioner to kind of roll with the punches and embrace whatever works in the short term. They got to start thinking season to season. I think that's what old Pete's doing, or your mark is doing right now. So, yeah, I think it's great. By the way, did we check what was the Wikipedia record? I know they've bumped into each other historically, right?
They've played three times when BYU was an independent. Two times in South Bend, once in October in Las Vegas.
I know there was some bristling, like a decade-ish ago when they would sort of talk about comparing themselves to Notre Dame. Notre Dame did not enjoy that comparison too much. But they, they're in similar situations in certain ways. But I guarantee you, there is no happier member of the Big 12 than Brigham Young University right now.
Also, one of the things that BYU's schedule, I think TJ maybe said this in the chat with us earlier, one of the things with BYU's schedule this year that hurt them was like a really good non-quality out of conference. If these two programs had played this game maybe this year, maybe both of them wouldn't be left out of the playoff. somebody would probably be potentially be in. I don't know. But think about that. Think about these are the last two teams out of the playoff this year.
So if you were to swap, I can't remember any of the Notre Dame games. I just think there's so much dead weight on there, but you can't swap the ACC because that would have been part of an agreement.
Well,
if you
swap the USC game, which is the most logical one here, it wouldn't have changed anything.
Right.
They would have made BYU 9-3, just like they made USC 9-3.
Arkansas?
Maybe.
Boise?
Then.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Those are the ones I was thinking of. Purdue series is also long, like is part of a longer
Very
deal.
Very long.
So.
86 times, I believe.
By the way, next year, maybe don't wear those shackles, boys. Like, you know, if you want to talk, I mean, like you tethered yourself to Purdue. Navy, I understand. And that's kind of part of college football history.
Godfrey?
Sure. Because that's how Notre Dame brands itself, Andy. Indiana.
Yeah, not the other team in Indiana right now. God forbid. Mm-hmm. They did beat them in the playoff last year.
They did. Yeah, that happened. Which I'm sure Notre Dame fans are going to bring up a few times in the next couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this sucks. Can we acknowledge it sucks even though we understand the reasons why it happened?
Definitely.
Yeah, it definitely stinks.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing, and then Godfrey brought this up on Sunday's show, and I think it's interesting. We keep blaming television for all this, but this is something television would love, and television's not going to get.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's why one of the funny things about all the playoff controversy is like these things aren't as conspiratorial is usually the wrong word to describe these situations. I think what you're seeing is just cause and effect, and a lot of people may be making short-sighted decisions because, yeah, any network, NBC especially, because they have the Notre Dame rights, they want USC on there. They want those two helmets on the field. Just like the college football playoff wanted Notre Dame in the playoff this year.
Yeah. Yeah, this is not good, a positive at all for really either TV network or right Fox that has the rights to the Big Ten in the USC Notre Dame game when it's at the Coliseum and NBC when it's at South Bend.
So
this is not ideal.
So it's interesting because we talk about TV controlling everything, but it really doesn't. And part of the problem is no one controls everything. There is no centralized governance in this thing.
Yeah.
It is a series of fiefdoms, and every fiefdom has its own level of control. Notre Dame more so than others.
Okay. Yes, but television encouraged the last round of alignment. Super League alignment, right? Television was nudging them forward. So, I said a second ago talking about maybe it's just a series of short-sighted decisions and it's not a conspiracy, Andy,
but
to your point.
We speak of television as a monolith. Television is not a monolith.
No, but the
Fox's interest and Disney's interest do not align.
Exactly. But Fox was in a lot of ways responding to what was happening with Disney and Red River going to the SEC by bringing the Los Angeles schools to the Big Ten. I don't think Fox was thinking long term about Notre Dame's viability when that happened.
Because Fox doesn't care because they don't have a deal with Notre Dame.
Exactly. So it's not that television controls everything. It's that the television companies control everything. And also, hey, much like college sports, the television companies are absolutely willing, like in sort of a big game of chess, to take a piece of IP like this, like Notre Dame USC. Fox doesn't care, right? They'll take that away from NBC. They don't care about doing things at the expense of the fans and the viewers,
right,
as long as they can boost their inventory.
And that's why the NFL, with its centralized governance,
a commissioner
controls the networks instead of letting the networks control them.
Which is why Jerry Jones doesn't strike a deal specifically for the Cowboys and the NFC East to be on one network and say, hey, you know what? We should play the Eagles six times a year because that's better ratings than if we play the Jaguars.
Yeah, that's the thing that people don't understand. Like, the NFL makes CBS, NBC, and Disney, and Fox, which are blood enemies all,
makes them
work together. They are forced, their announcers are forced to advertise games that are on other networks.
Mm-hmm.
Think
about anybody who's an NFL fan watching or listening to this. Think about the already artificial inflation of certain properties in the NFL. Like when an NFC East team or an AFC East team, like the Patriots or the Cowboys, when they're good, think about how much more coverage they receive disproportionately. The league is aware of this and they throttle as much as they can.
Yes.
When we did the miniseries last year, Who Killed College Football? The entire one of the conceits of the episodes was, what if Jerry Jones could strike his own deals for everything? That was how I was. That was a way of explaining the situation. Suck. It would be terrible. But that is what college does. What if the NFC East could go out and seek its own television deal? And so that's basically how you explain college sports to someone from the outside. You're seeing the results of that because there was no third party to step in when USC and UCLA went to the Big Ten and say, hey, what are the long-term effects of this? What traditional games are we losing? And by the way, we could be doing this podcast segment 12 years ago when the Backyard Brawl, when Kansas-Missouri, I mean, I can keep going, right? Like when Texas A&M.
We got back, but they didn't play it for 12 years.
The only reason we got it back was because the corporate mergers happened to work out in the favor of that rivalry.
Right.
I wrote a whole video for the Secret Base documentary on Texas and A&M. As lucrative as that game was, they still couldn't find a way to do it because it didn't make financial sense for the competing conferences. So this story is as old as time, at least in the modern era of football, which is these TV deals are not with the like pure sports best interest in mind.
But this is the problem. I think eventually there will be a breaking point and it has to be decided one way or the other.
Right.
Like I don't necessarily want a Super League, but there are parts of a Super League I would want. And one of those is centralized like government.
Universal scheduling.
And yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where they
yeah,
would universal say, scheduling. You know what? Right. Notre Dame and USC, historically important and also makes us a ton of money. So we're going to have them play every year, whether they like it or not.
Yes.
Now, the USC and the Big Ten people would tell you that the playoff format, hate to devolve this conversation and back into playoff format conversation, but like they would tell you, well, this rivalry would stay alive if we had automatic guarantees, a certain amount of automatic
Well, they'd also tell you this
rivalry
would stay alive if Notre Dame would just join us.
Join a league.
They would definitely
tell you that too. You know, one thing missing from the conversation, this conversation about Notre Dame and USC is, you guys remember the report that came out? I think it was it John Orrand? I can't remember. I hope I'm not reading that. But I think he reported about the Netflix situation with USC and Notre Dame. They were speaking to Netflix about playing a game independently, and Netflix getting the rights to that, you know, that was real, and they were talking about that.
I feel like that was a subplot on Ballers.
Yeah, but like USC, they were discussing that, and I don't know what happened, except that the their partnering networks weren't really fans of that. But now we're not getting the game at all.
Yeah, and that is. The problem with this is the solution is always, oh, well.
Yeah.
What can
done? There's no outrage. No one cares what we're saying. Like, the commissioners are going to keep listening to the networks. No one's going to listen to this segment and go, man, they really had a point. We should find a way. Nope. It might come back in 30. It might not. They don't give
it. It'll come back when there's a Super League, which Notre Dame will
maybe
be a part of.
Yeah.
Which
and will you be assume USC would be
Notre
too.
Notre Dame joining a conference, but not really joining a conference. Yeah.
But. I guess the only consistent message here, if you're not in the college football industry and you're listening or watching, is there's never not change. And whatever you feel like could never change probably can and will at some point. Nothing is sacred.
No. And this is proof.
Yeah. A lot of people.
If you needed more proof, I think there's been enough. But if you needed more, this is it.
Yeah. Because both fans, like alumni especially of these two institutions, and there are a ton of people in Los Angeles in the entertainment industry that I know that are USC grads, USC law grads. And like, this is the game. It's not UCLA, guys. I'm sorry. And like Oregon to USC, that's a one generation occurrence to them. This is the game. This is the game they talk about. You know, this is the game, Bush push, you know, like.
How many Heisman Trophy winners played in this game? Yeah. Like, think about it that way.
Yeah. No, TV, yeah. I can't remember what was in my story. It was So Notre Dame and USC hold blah, blah, blah. They combine have won 24 national championships, 15 Heisman trophies, and have produced more than 1,000 NFL draftees, which is believed to be the highest combined total of NFL draftees of any college football rivalry series.
Yeah. So when the next time a conference commissioner gets up and tells us how great it is about this expanded agreement with so-and-so television network, they don't have the sport's best interest at heart. That's no one's job right now. And it may never be one person's job, because the power broker is at stake. Unless, as Andy's pointed out before, if one Leviathan can swallow another in the next 10 years, that's the only way we're getting centralized governance.
Because if you're Greg Sankey and you're Tony Petitti, you don't want centralized government because there's a chance the centralized governor ain't you. And you only want something if it's going to be you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it sucks.
How college football explains the Middle East.
Pretty much. Hey, when we come back, though, we are going to delve into some real tradition that actually matters. And that, of course,
Sprinkles.
Is playing a college football game in Orlando and sacrificing an anthropomorphic breakfast pastry to the winning team. We'll talk about it when we come back. We are back to College Football Inquirer, and you know, we complained for a whole segment about television, but there is something really good on your TV, and that's if you turn it on, look at the home screen of your smart TV, find that Yahoo Sports Network icon, click on it, and you can watch the College Football Inquirer. If you're a podcast listener, just imagine how much more amazing this show could be if you saw how glorious Stephen Godfrey's hair was live on video.
It's really the quaff is it's having a really good month. Okay, let's just be honest. Shout out to my stylist
Stephen Godfrey and Julian Sayin fighting it out for most fabulous hair in college football.
Hey, fast, I don't want to derail the show, Andy. It's not just Julian now. So apparently I'm rocking the same hairstyle as like Cade Klubnick and Mateer.
Oh yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mateer. Yeah.
I, as a middle-aged father of three, I did not mean to do this, but I can only really infer that everyone is copying me.
Yeah. So basically, copying you. Yeah.
You go into your haircut place and say, "Give me the QB1."
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm worth $4 million in the portal.
YahooSports.tv is where you go if you want to watch the show on the go, on your tablet, on your phone, on your laptop, anytime, 24/7, 365. YahooSports.tv. Let us talk about some bowl games because Notre Dame playing BYU, agreeing to play BYU instead of USC, does eliminate the thought that some BYU fans had put out there that Notre Dame was attempting to duck BYU in the Pop-Tarts Bowl. I have a theory that Notre Dame was never going to play in the Pop-Tarts Bowl, not because they're mad about the college football playoff leaving them out, not because they wanted to duck BYU, but because there is a new tradition in the Pop-Tarts Bowl, and that is adding sprinkles to your helmet. Georgia Tech and BYU, the two teams playing in the Pop-Tarts Bowl, have added sprinkles to the stripe in their helmet. If you've not seen it,
it looks good.
It would not look good on a Notre Dame helmet.
I'm so happy this is happening because this is like Andy's all the president's men. Like if we could FOIA Notre Dame and be like this entire time it's been all about the sprinkles. It was a false flag operation from the beginning, and this was all about not wanting the sprinkles. I love this so much.
I mean, if you're protecting tradition, which let's be honest,
people the Irish are
25 minutes of the show, we're not, but you wouldn't put sprinkles on that helmet. But we got to talk about, like, we've talked a ton about the college football playoff games. There are some really intriguing bowl matchups coming up. This Georgia Tech BYU game being one of them. Brent Key obviously had a great year with the Yellow Jackets this year. They were 11-2. We saw BYU play really well. Two losses to Texas Tech really is where it went wrong for them. But I like this Pop-Tarts Bowl as a celebration of two very good seasons with two teams that love to mix it up in the trenches.
Dude, this is, what I love about this game is that it is just it's a giant toddler just banging toy cars into each other. And this is going to look like a crash test dummy video. Haynes King against BYU's line. And then, really both sides in the trenches. This is going to be a festive embrace of the physical nature of football.
And then the consumption of a,
and then we're gonna kill a mascot Pop-Tart. Live.
Yeah. Then we're gonna devour a mascot,
a semi pagan.
What's new this year? They do something new every year. Don't we have a new flavor?
I don't know.
We have a new flavor.
Gullick Jr. and
when flavor gets sacrificed, I believe they do not bring that flavor back as the mascot.
They're dead for
Does
good.
Anyone
they're
realize dead. How weirdly pagan all this sounds?
Well, the dead mascot showed up last year.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah.
Again, like
yeah. up in the the upper bleachers of the stadium. Yes. The strawberry.
God, this would make strawberry? A this would make a great Robert Eggers movie. This is just like a pagan sacrifice ceremony. We're all like, do it, kill him, kill him. What time are we going to Disney? So, just absolutely. By the way, 10 out of 10. Love this bowl game. I'm making fun of it, but like, this is what you should be doing.
They've done a tremendous job.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Bang up job. Yeah.
In fact, they emailed me. I woke up this morning and I got an email from the Pop Tarts Bowl. It was like, hey, we want to send you like a Pop Tarts care package. It's got
okay. Hang on.
They sent me a Pop Tart costume.
I have a Pop Tart costume, by the way. Whoa. Is this because of all the things I said about the bowls that I don't get a Pop Tarts care package?
I don't know.
I grew up in suburbia in the 80s. Half of my diet was Pop Tarts in the early 90s. Okay. I want my care package. Is that Kellogg's?
I'm trying to find out, go back to the email to see exactly what is in this care package. If I better ever do get it. When is the bowl game? What date?
December 27th. So that would be on, Saturday.
Saturday.
5 days from our recording, yes.
Yeah, I've got to see what is in this Pop-Tart.
Well, I would hope package. Pop-Tarts. Real fast, favorite Pop-Tart.
Yeah.
Go, Andy. I'm going to go Frosted Cherry. It's vintage. And also, I like strawberry. The s'mores one if I'm under the influence. Strawberry?
I'm a strawberry guy.
Yep. All right. I like the s'mores one if I'm not sober. Oh, if you're not sober.
Here are your edible mascots this year. You have Team Sprinkles and Team Swirls. So Team Sprinkles is led by Protein Slammin' Strawberry. I guess they have a protein Pop-Tart now.
Wow. I see it. It's in the care package.
This one is a muscular buff Pop-Tart.
I see that.
Protein.
I'm so mad at Pop-Tarts right now.
Slammin' Strawberry is what it's called.
And you have Slammin' Strawberry. Frosted Cherry and Frosted Cookies and Cream. Those cookies are your Team Sprinkles.
Yeah.
Ooh, Team Swirls, Frosted Chocolate Chip Cookie Dough, which is returning to shelves after a 3-year hiatus. Frosted Wildberry, which I know is one of the most popular flavors out there. And Frosted Hot Fudge Sundae.
Frosted Chocolate Chip Cookie Dough. Oh my God.
Does Pop-Tarts bowl have a handle? Because I'm in the middle of blowing them up.
The Frosted Cherry sounds good. I don't think I've ever had Frosted Cherry.
That's the one I said was the best. Yeah.
All of these are the care package. Are 6 boxes of all of these. So you just get 6 boxes of these. And I think you might also get like little stuffed animal type Pop-Tarts.
I have kids. Where's my care package? All right. I'm in the middle of blowing them up on Twitter. Frosted. Yes.
I love how he's writing a strongly worded letter right now in the middle of the show.
I grew up on Pop-Tarts, and at some point we switched to toaster strudels.
How dare you? Wow.
So then I started the flaky, toaster strudels.
But the frosting packet never opened correctly, and you got the frosting all over your fingers.
No one has ever correctly heated a toaster strudel. It was always Florida asphalt on the outside and still a solid block of ice on the inside. Yeah, toaster strudels.
I definitely eat them with ice.
That's anti-American sentiment. The toaster strudel should stay in Germany. We won that war. Absolutely not. This is a Pop-Tarts nation. But apparently it's not because I don't get one. Where's my handout?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. By the way, it's so easy to buy me off. TJ, photos of these mascots.
Yeah.
And
good.
Protein Slammin' Strawberry looks like it could take them all. So
he's pretty buff. Yeah.
But I don't know how he's going to fit in the life size toaster and then get consumed.
Yeah.
I remember the early 90s.
It is a little bit like watching the Iowa State players eat the mascot at the end is a little depressing.
It's a pagan ritual. I'm telling you. It's a Robert Eggers film. Shout out. All right. One quick trend since I guess I'm going to be the one to transition us back into sports.
It's 10 grams of protein in this Pop-Tart. 10 grams in one Pop-Tart.
Please polish off a lift with that. I want video of you. I want you to finish a set. Okay. Maybe it's back day. Just, make sure your scaps are stable. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. You're working the back and you're like, I'm going to polish this off. Yeah. We're doing delts, of course. Don't neglect back and legs, as we know, right? It's not about chest and arms every day. And then you just fire off a Pop-Tart in the gym. I need video of this.
There you go.
I had a football thing. What was it? Oh, No interim head coach has won a bowl game yet.
Ah, yeah.
This is my FYI. Oh my God. No interim head coach.
How many interim head coaches in the next few days?
Andy, I'm glad you asked. So far, this is a trend of just three results. Old Dominion over USF, Arkansas State over Missouri State, and North Carolina State beat the brakes off Memphis. As we record this on the 22nd, the next five bowls on the schedule all feature one missing head coach, if you will. So we have Washington State against Utah State. I would watch out for Utah State in that one with Bronco. Toledo versus Louisville. Southern Miss versus Western Kentucky. Ohio versus UNLV. That one's not really a new job. It's a different situation. And then Cal versus Hawaii. So, you know, those of you who are inclined to do things in the desert, if you will, or an app on your phone now, maybe watch that trend. Interim head coaches not having a good time.
What do you make of that?
Look,
nobody cares
it's not
about the
just
game.
The interim head coach part. It's because everybody opts out too.
Yeah,
you just don't even have the team you had.
Yeah. I should say you are correct. I should clarify that it's not the absence of the coach's genius. What's that?
Pete Golding is not an interim, so that doesn't.
No,
count.
He's not an interim. It doesn't count. Yeah, right. No, it doesn't count.
Yeah,
he is their head coach He is their new head coach.
Yeah,
I think as an addendum to our segment the other day, one of the things that you should have to do. Like attention, Lane Kiffin. If you're the next head coach at LSU, you better get your headset ready. You're coaching against Houston in the Texas Bowl. What is that next week? I think the new head coach should step in and immediately have to coach the bowl game. I think that should happen. Yeah.
Didn't Fickell do that when he took the Wisconsin job?
He did, and David Cutcliffe did it when I was in high school. When David Cutcliffe got the Ole Miss job from Tommy Tuberville, he coached against Texas Tech using like Tuberville's playbook and lost. And I'm sure it was an Independence Bowl.
It's interesting because like as we get into the more marquee bowl matchups toward the end of this week and into next week, the interim coaches decline. Though Biff Poggi is the one that I think is the one we're all going to be talking about because Biff Poggi, his team will be playing Texas. So Michigan, Texas in the Citrus Bowl, which is the same stadium as the Pop-Tarts Bowl, by the way. But so that would be the only one. And then it's also a lot of coaches that were mentioned and interviewed, I think, during the process of this coaching carousel and stayed. So you got the, on New Year's Eve, you got the ReliaQuest Bowl, which is the former Outback Bowl between Vanderbilt and Iowa. So Clark Lee, who was in the mix for quite a few things. Eli Drinkwitz, whose name popped up a bunch. The Gator Bowl. That one's on Saturday of this week. They're playing Virginia. And then I'm trying to think. Brent Key's name popped up a lot. So he pops up in the Pop-Tarts Bowl. Brent Key, Kalani Sitake. Did you guys see the video of them with the trophy? Which, by the way, the trophy is a working toaster.
The trophy's a toaster. Yeah, I did see that. They each toasted their Pop-Tart and then had a bite.
I am tweeting this live on Yahoo.
Down for it.
I am an important influencer. I'm following up.
You're trying to get the care package?
I want my Pop-Tarts.
Yeah.
Can I put everybody on the spot? And I'll start to give you guys some time.
All right.
Remaining bowl matchup you are most interested in seeing. I am going to go with New Year's Eve, 3 p.m. Eastern, ABC, Michigan, Texas in the Citrus Bowl. I'm fascinated by this. I want to see Biff. We're going to talk in a few minutes about how, you know, what Biff said on Monday when he popped off. And I'm fascinated to see Biff leading Michigan. Now, we've seen him lead Michigan two games this season already. Remember Central Michigan and the Nebraska game? He was in charge. So we've already seen it. But Biff's a fascinating guy. Like, I had him on my show when he was the Charlotte head coach, in his first year as the Charlotte head coach. He had a cigar in his mouth the entire time we did the interview, which was amazing. So,
Scavenging the bowls here.
I'll help Ross. I tried not to be a hipster on this one, but I can't because it's just pocked with a lot of interims and I'm going to go with the fact that the Birmingham Bowl couldn't fill out its allotment, so they went with a rivalry game inside the Sun Belt and deeper than Hayden. So the Birmingham Bowl will feature Georgia Southern and App State. If you don't know, that's basically like a Texas Oklahoma in the Sun Belt. Other than that, guys, it's hard to find. I think Tennessee Illinois could be good.
I've got one. Okay. How about give me? I think it used to be the Outback Bowl, right? Now it's the ReliaQuest Bowl.
The ReliaQuest, yep.
Iowa in Vanderbilt. I want to see Diego one final time.
I want to see Diego in conversation.
Against the Iowa defense, too.
What do you think, what do you think Kirk Ferentz would say if he and Diego got in conversation?
That's literally, so Andy, I said, I want to see Diego Pavia in conversation with Kirk Ferentz. That's what I want.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's like a you know a day before the game somewhere in Tampa. Maybe they're just hanging out in Ybor City, you know, snacking on some Maduros. Like, just I want those two talking life.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Talking life and ball.
You know, Nebraska Utah could be somewhat interesting.
Yeah, that was the one I was going to. That was like my second choice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Nebraska Utah. Yeah. We won't have obviously Raiola won't be playing in that game.
Yeah,
well, he was hurt anyway. But yes.
Oh you know, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
But that and the Utah thing is, as you guys kind of alluded to, but I have no problem. I think we should expand that out. Kyle Whittingham has made it clear he wasn't really down with being done.
No. Yeah. You called it, Andy. We talked about this in the last episode. You called it and said this was not a retirement. This was a, this was just sort of, he was acquiescing.
It's a good segue to our Michigan conversation.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Let's talk Michigan.
Hang on real fast. Rice's option against Texas State's offense. That's like, it's like one of those after January games that's going to be buried. That's just going to look weird. Just watch it and have fun. Sorry.
I like it. That's nice. I like it.
Yeah.
When we come back, let's talk Michigan. They've still got a coaching search going on as we're recording this. Now, it's a coaching search. Situations are fluid. But as we're recording this, they've still got a coaching search going on. They've got an interim who is making his case for the job.
Mm.
I've got a few ideas if they want to widen the net. And then there's also some folks, more conventional candidates, that still sound like they may be viable. We'll talk about that when we come back. We're back at the College Football Inquirer. And what seemingly has become an every show segment, as the Michigan coaching search turns, I realize we're recording this a day before the show drops. We may have some news. We'll see. But I find this very interesting. Biff Poggi, the interim coach at Michigan, no matter what happens with the search, what he said on Monday, utterly fascinating. Let me read you the quote from Biff Poggi. This is interim Michigan coach Biff Poggi, who came in to help out Jim Harbaugh, worked with Jim Harbaugh, then became the Charlotte head coach for 2 years, got fired, went back to help Michigan, was the interim coach while Sharon Moore was suspended for two games this year, and is now the interim coach again and is trying to get the full-time job. So here's what Biff said. It has been 5 years of, let's just call it what it is, a malfunctioning organization where there's something every year. I know that the athletic director has made it very clear he doesn't want any more of that. If I am named the coach, which again, I don't know if I am, there will be massive self-examination of what happens in the building, and you can expect a lot of changes.
Whew. Mm. Okay. You know, if this is an episode of Succession, I'm curious the strategy here. This is certainly a bold declaration.
Yeah. You don't see this a lot from interim coaches in an active coaching search.
Ross, have you ever, I was going to say, Ross, have you ever come across where, because obviously he wants the job, right? But at the same time, he's like kind of scorching, you know, the old Russian proverb, scorched earth. Like he's burning everything that came before him and that was responsible for him getting there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty wild, some of his comments. And I think it is, you mentioned it earlier, Godfrey, we were off air, but like maybe this is strategic in a way of his way of trying to signal that, you know, he deserves this job and he will basically clean house or whatever if he gets it. I know he had at least a second or maybe you could call it a third interview earlier this week. We're recording this on Monday. I think that was Sunday that he met with AD Ward Manuel. It probably could have been considered like a third different interview for the job. He's got, you know, he's got a plan like all these interim coaches, right? It reminds me every year or every time there's an interim coach that makes this pitch, I go back to the Dabo Sweeney's and the Ed Orgeron's who had the pitch with, you know, the hiring of this defensive, big name defensive and offensive coordinator. And he's going through all this again. I think he's going through all that. You know, do they want more of an outside hire, yes. But the way this is going, this thing may end up turning around and just, hey, we want to retain the roster and retain the quarterback on the roster. And in order to do that, maybe we need to just promote the current interim coach.
You want to hear what else he said when he got asked why he should be the next head coach? This is magic.
Go for it.
Because I know what the hell I'm doing, Poggi said.
Yeah.
Wow. I have a long 10-year history of knowledge of this place. This place is really important to me and my wife. One of our boys played here, Henry, and we have two daughters, most of you don't know about, who graduated from here or are graduating, and this place has been great to them. One is a doctor, one is going to be a doctor, and Henry, talk about the power of Michigan, he's now an investment banker. This place is magical. The program means a lot to me, and it's one of the things I want to fix before I go smoke myself to death with cigars. I want to fix this program.
Wait, that's the quote verbatim?
Yes.
Wow. I kind of like this guy.
There you go.
Love it.
Yeah. He kind of grows on you, doesn't he?
Did he say anything about wearing sleeves?
Listen, if he gets the job in September, he better show up with no sleeves. The Michigan men had better not demand that he wear sleeves.
I think we know how that one's going to turn out. Again, if you read the Rich Rodriguez book, I think Biff's going to probably have to up his wardrobe just a little bit.
He did wear sleeves for the Central Michigan game and the Nebraska game. So
yes, they weren't going to let him. I don't think they're going to let him do that. You know, do the sleeveless. But I mean, maybe this happens. I don't know.
Bridgier or proper coach?
Well, maybe a very short term, inexpensive contract. Again, like we saw, I'll go back. You know what LSU did with Ed Orgeron, incentive laden contract that's short and easily get out of. You know, a way to easily get out of it.
Right. Hey, Ross.
Yeah.
Do you remember? Maybe. I'm sure Andy remembers this too, but I definitely remember. Do you remember when you're talking about Ed Orgeron and he comes in with that plan? It was Joe Oliva was the AD, right?
Joe Oliva. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember
offensive coordinator was?
Do you remember his offensive coordinator? Do you remember who he's going to hire? He's going to hire an offensive coordinator.
Yeah, Lane Kiffin. Lane. Who actually? I was told during that time period, that week.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving week or so, that Lane and Joe Oliva had a phone call, basically, and Lane was like, if I don't get a head coaching job, I'm coming to Baton Rouge and then, to be at Orgeron's offensive coordinator. And then he got the FIU job because Nick probably didn't want him
to be LSU's
offensive coordinator. Yes.
This is one of my favorite stories because, spending a lot of time with LSU fans and alumni and stuff, like, they're like, we had him. We had the game's best offensive mind until Nick... He put him at FAU. That's the power that Nick has. And you know what? It's kind of not wrong. You know?
Well, yeah. Maybe not Nick as much as, well, maybe Nick behind pulling the strings on a certain agent.
For a while there in Baton Rouge. Every word of this story, by the way.
Yeah.
Every word.
No, me too.
Which story?
Me too.
That Nick's
story. You're talking about Lane?
Put him at FAU for that very reason.
I do too. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Go Owls. Yeah.
They didn't want to coach against him. I wouldn't either.
Right? Absolutely. No. I mean, we all know for a fact that like Nick did operate with like a long view in mind when he was, you know, and this was back when it was such a strange thing that Nick was hiring his competitors as assistants.
2016.
And, yeah. Different time.
So what do you do if you're Michigan? There are more conventional, obviously Biff wants the job. We know Biff wants the job. We know it's possible he could get it. More conventional candidates exist. I think Jeff Brohm at Louisville would be one of those. We've heard Eli Drinkwitz, Jed Fish. Brohm, I think, could be very successful there. We've seen Brohm take Purdue to the Big Ten title game. So I would imagine that.
Is this or is this not Ann Arbor? Sorry, that was an XFL joke. That was a niche ass joke. Sorry.
If you got that, you're a real one.
And you're also a real old one. Jeff Brohm is, I think, would fit a lot of the parameters that they would need. I think he could survive the non-football parts of the Michigan head coaching job. I would say I spent a little time with Jeff and I think he could turn that on.
And
for him or, you know, the other candidate you hear about is the one there, in Godfrey's town at Vanderbilt.
Clark Lea.
You know, and do they need somebody like that? that after all this controversy and off the field transgressions, they need somebody that has been successful at a high academic institution.
Yeah.
With the rigors of enrollment and admissions. Michigan has similarly, but you know, Clark Lea comes with none of the baggage, right? He's sort of
He's the quietest. Right.
But I'll ask the same question I asked when Clark Lea was a candidate for these other jobs. Does he come with Jerry Kill? Because
in this case,
the answer to that may change how I feel about it.
No, I think he'd be bringing Jerry. I think he'd be bringing Barton Simmons. I think he'd be bringing the whole crew. You know, if you're tepid about that for some reason as a Michigan fan, and I'm not trying to create an opening at Vanderbilt, but I thought Clark's response, they came back and went to practice after the Heisman, getting ready for the bowl against Iowa. And well, I'm not relitigating the Diego Pavia F the voters thing, but his response as Diego's head coach was the best, most measured and thoughtful response, just at a media availability, you know, basic little scrum. I think Clark has become an exceptionally good steward and CEO and has a lot of buy-in from his players because of authentic relationships. Again, not trying to push the guy off of West End Avenue, but I really think he could be part of that power washing effort that needs to go on at the University of Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I feel like I'm selling coaches here. Like I know one thing. See, I'm not getting a cut.
You know, agent Stephen.
Call Godfrey. Me Jimmy.
Yep. I've got a few if they want to expand the search. Because
I like your list.
Get Kalen DeBoer.
Yeah.
I've got a few, and I've thrown these out in a column and on three. Take it if you want, Michigan people. Take it if you want, turnkey ZRG chat low search firm. Jason Eck at New Mexico.
Yes.
Get him before he gets somewhere else in the Big Ten, and you got to deal with him.
Wisconsin.
Because I think he's going to be awesome. Yeah, he's a former Wisconsin offensive lineman, toiled most of his career in the FCS, built Idaho into a winner, and then got the New Mexico job this year. And if you don't know how bad New Mexico was when he got there, basically anybody who took a snap at New Mexico last year was playing for Utah or Utah State this year.
Yeah.
It was a ground-up rebuild. He takes them to Ann Arbor week one and is respectable.
Mm-hmm.
They then start out okay, but then win their last six and are in contention for the Mountain West title at the end of the season.
Should have been in the Mountain West title game if not for the nefarious conspiracy that was Bill Connolly purposefully working against them.
Nerds.
This is why you don't go to math class, kids.
It's one of the better coaching jobs you will ever see, what he's done in New Mexico this year. And he is going to be a power conference head coach.
Yeah.
He is probably going to be the SEC of the Big Ten. Get him before he gets you.
I think he is the next Big Ten coach. I don't know if it's like a Summerall type of hype cycle yet, but I think in 2 years, it really could be. Yeah.
Yeah. Couple other ideas. I got two in the ACC. Okay. Tony Elliott. And I realize Tony Elliott's lifetime record is not great, but this was the first time Tony Elliott's had money to put a roster together.
Yeah.
And guess what? He won 10 games with it. And if you want to talk about people who can shepherd a program through a stressful time, nothing that's going on at Michigan even compares with what Tony Elliott's had to do with it at Virginia.
Yeah.
In 2022, one of the former Virginia players opened fire on a charter bus after a field trip, killed three Virginia football players, injured another, injured a track athlete. Tony Elliott had to guide the program through the aftermath of that.
Yeah.
And he did a very good job with it. And so you talk about people and leaders and leaders and best of Michigan. This is that kind of guy. And
Definitely. So
I throw him out there. I'm also throwing Duke coach Manny Diaz out there.
Definitely.
You can say what you want about he got fired at Miami, but do we not learn from our experiences? He became a lights out DC at Penn State. He then went to Duke where he picked up right where Mike Elko left off
won
the ACC this year. So three coaches have won the SEC at Duke. William D. Murray won it five times, the last time in 1962. So God bless him. Wallace Wade also won the SoCon at Duke. Steve Spurrier in 1989.
OBC. Yeah.
And Manny Diaz. Like,
good list.
Good list to be on.
Yeah.
Is that it? Do you have one more?
One more. Kyle Whittingham.
Okay.
Hadn't forgotten how to win.
I got one more I want to throw on
Go
here.
Go for it.
It's a CAA client that they've kind of had stuck on, like on that elevation mode for a long time. Jeff Munkin, Jeff Muggan would not run the triple. Don't even start on that, y'all. Ross, a couple years ago, I think when you were at SI, you wrote a really good story on triple culture and the coaching tree culture. Please read anything that any of us have written about the triple. It's not what you think it is, and they would not be running the Army offense in Ann Arbor, but I think he would be a fantastic hire.
He's been so close.
On so many jobs. Going all the way back
State,
to
West Virginia.
He was the runner up at Kansas, really kind of thought to be the guy who was going to get the job. And then Lance Leipold kind of won out in the end. There was some disagreement about some of the structure that they would run on offense. But since that time, I know he's interviewed really well at a lot of places. I've always had him pegged to go to NC State because his former AD is there. Book Oregon, but Doran's hanging around and beating the crap out of North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
This is going.
Speaking
to be,
of North Carolina,
yeah, did we got to throw it in real fast, Ross?
We should end the show. Yes,
we should end the show with Bobby Petrino's return to college athletics as he hooks up apparently with Bill Belichick as North Carolina's new offensive coordinator.
Jordan, listen to me. I'm really sorry about 10% of what I said.
Are we talking to Michael Jordan or Jordan Hudson?
I'm talking to Jordan Hudson. Michael ain't touching this. He's got NASCAR problems right now. Jordan, get that reality show back. Do whatever you can. Call Hulu. Get that show back.
See,
Bobby,
I don't think this happened.
Bobby and Steve.
But Bobby has no problem hiring his son or sons-in-law. So
no, I just want Bobby and Steve. I just want the meetings.
You just want the odd couple. Mm-hmm.
I want the arguments. I just please God, give it to me.
But I don't think they have arguments because I think Daddy Bill.
What's he gonna do? Run and tell Daddy
with an iron fist? No, I don't think so. But I also don't think we worry about Bobby as a destabilizing influence when he's not the head coach. That doesn't work on Bill Belichick.
No, you dropped a scorpion into a basket of snakes.
Who has his own, by the way, Bill Belichick, who has his own, brought his own destabilizing influence.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's got a couple destabilizing influences. Some would say destabilized him.
Oh, boy.
The sport never stops being interesting.
No, sir. Never.
Nope.
Yep. Yep. Every and we day, score more points than soccer, new. So that's why we're better.
That's right. We will talk to tomorrow. You again on Sunday. A Pop-Tart will have been ritually sacrificed.
A Pop-Tart better be on my doorstep.
We'll talk to you Sunday.